Jackson trying to win it for the Islanders.
Will it quickly score? The Islanders win it. It's a SoCal sweep for the New York Islanders.
Islanders country, hello, and welcome to the Isles Blog Podcast. I'm Joe Bono. He's Tom DeLuca. The Isles now 9-5 after completing a successful road trip on the West Coast in November. Yes, believe it. With three consecutive wins over the Ducks, Sharks, and Coyotes, they now sit alone in second place in the Metropolitan Division with 18 points. And to talk about it, we bring in John Kreiser, writer, columnist, managing editor for NHL.com. Be sure to follow him on Twitter, at @JKreiser77NHL. John, Joe Bono, and Tom DeLuca, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. How's everything going?
Things are going good. So, John, I don't know what everyone was so worried about going on the West Coast, losing the first two games. And you know what? Kyle Okposo kept on saying this in interviews, that it's a different team than the previous years. And, you know, they really did prove that in the last three games. How impressed were you in what they were able to accomplish, three wins in 4 days, over that level of competition?
Well, that's very impressive because they did not start out. The week before, they were very poor in their last home game against the Winnipeg Jets, who admittedly may be a little better, at least right now, than most of us thought they were going to be. They weren't very good in Colorado, and they were good for about 2.5 periods in San Jose, which wasn't enough. And I know before the trip, Jack Capuano said he was looking forward to that three-day break between the game with the Sharks and the games in Southern California. He thought that it would be a good time for some team bonding and also to get some serious practice in, because you don't get a whole lot of three-day, four-day breaks in an NHL schedule. And one of the casualties of that, especially as the season drags on, often tends to be good, solid practices. They came out, they got a break in Anaheim because Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf were out sick, and Frederik Andersen couldn't play. But the mark of a good team is that when you get an opportunity like that, you take advantage of it. And they didn't play great, but they played well enough to win. They went to L.A. the next night. And again, they were a little lucky because the Kings were coming off the long road trip. And a lot of times teams in their first game back are a little, takes a little while to get their legs under them. But the Islanders played very well, and they won the shootout. And then they were the better team in Arizona two nights later. Again, they caught a little break because Arizona was at Anaheim the night before. They won a shootout. But they were unlucky in the sense that Mike Smith, who had struggled so badly for most of the first month, appears to have found his game. If you watch the Islander game Saturday, the best player on the ice was probably Mike Smith, the Phoenix Arizona goaltender. And Franz Nielsen found a way to get one by him with not much time left, and all of a sudden what looked like it was going to be the usual disastrous road trip turns into a pretty good, solid trip, especially because some of the other teams in the Metropolitan Division are struggling right now. The Rangers were dreadful last night at home, and they let one get away in Toronto. The Devils are in a funk. Columbus is on the verge of falling right out through the basement. Because they're so beat up. Carolina, I don't think anybody expects them to be all that good. They need some serious rebuilding. And so the opportunity is there for the Islanders to, if they continue this, to make the playoffs, which would be a really nice way to go into the new building next year.
Well, John, we look at Jack Capuano, not the most qualified of coaches, but he is the longest tenured in the Metropolitan Division. A lot of fans were calling for the firing of Capuano after the first two games of the road trip that the Islanders lost. Could they really afford to fire him and maybe throw away games, so to speak, with a new coach coming in or an interim? And in such an urgent year, is that something they could really do, or should they just try to ride out Jack Capuano?
Well, it's an interesting question because a lot of Islander fans don't like many of Capuano's strategic moves or non-moves, or what they perceive as non-moves. If you look on social media, there's a lot of people criticizing him for overusing the fourth line at times or not calling his time out at the right time. But the most fascinating thing is that this team, for whatever reason, and Jack's a nice guy. He gets his point across, but he's a good guy to talk to. They play hard for him. Even last year, after the Olympics, when they had nothing to play for, their star center was out, Oposo went out, Vanek was in the midst of being traded, and that team played hard down the stretch. I mean, they really did. I think they helped themselves by trading Andrew McDonald, who's a nice player, but is not a good possession player, as a lot of the advanced stats show. And they also inadvertently got some help that way when Brian Strait was hurt. Not that you want to see anybody get hurt, but his possession numbers were not that good either. And their possession numbers went up as the season went on. And Jack was very good at working in players like, especially Brock Nelson, who really appears that he's going to be a terrific player as he goes along. And he's only like 21 or something like that. He's a young kid, and he still has some room to fill out physically. But he goes to the net, and he's one. I've seen him. I think I saw every rookie camp he was at, because he and Calvin DeHaan became fixtures at the summer rookie camps. And you watch Nelson, and he's one of those guys that puck just seems to follow him around.
And let's stick with Brock Nelson. Obviously, people thought he'd be penciled in on the top line to start the year. Didn't end up that way. Put up a lot of points early on. Playing right now with Strome and Anders Lee. But come power play time, he's on there with Tavares and Oposo as this carousel of left wingers continues to go on. Eventually, will Brock Nelson be the guy with Tavares and Oposo and be the permanent fixture there for the rest of the year?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. And, you know, if you remember the Edmonton Oilers, the great Gretzky-Curry combination, they ran left wings through that. There was never really a third guy. And a lot of times, if you look in NHL history, especially as you become toward more recent years, great lines are more like great twosomes, and the third guy can rotate. And that's what they may wind up with, unless they find somebody who really clicks in there. You know, Thomas Vanek last year fit in there very well. It was, in that regard, it was a shame that they couldn't work out a deal with him to have him stay, because that really was a very potent line. And they need, it's going to take them a while to figure this out. Because when Vanek was traded last year, John Tavares was already gone for the season with the knee problem after the Olympics. So you really haven't had it, except for the preseason games. You know, there were like a half dozen preseason games. You really haven't had a chance to see who's, who can work on that for a sustained amount of time. And sometimes the person you put there might depend on who the opponent is. If you have a faster opponent, well, maybe you keep Corey Conacher there that night. Another night it might be Nelson. It might be Anders Lee. I think that that's going to be a learning process for a while to see who's the best fit with those two.
Well, John, last week, Jack Capuano throws a curveball and sits one of his hardworking fourth liners, Casey Cizikas. Is there a possibility that we could see a trend like that continue, where we see a regular in the lineup who isn't performing take a seat for a night?
Absolutely. The one thing about the Islanders this year is they have depth that they haven't had in years and years. I'm not going to tell you that Nikolai Kuhlman and Mikhail Grabowski are great players, but they're good players, and they're reliable players. You look at it now, and now when Josh Bailey comes back from his hand problem, and later on when Michael Grabner comes back, they're going to have more forwards than spots. I mean, Colin McDonald, who was a regular fourth-line right wing the last couple of years, is enjoying the delights of Bridgeport, Connecticut right now, because they have that kind of depth. And you may be up to a point where Jack can afford to sit somebody who's struggling, give him a night off, just like he did with Cizikas and he did with Corey Conacher the next night. When Josh Bailey comes back, which should be pretty soon because the brace is off his broken hand, so he can start working on stick handling and passing and shooting again. They're going to have to make a decision, because they can't, you can't carry too many people. There's a limit, and do you send somebody down? Do you, does somebody have to go on waivers? Things like that. It will be interesting, because it's the kind of decision that, in terms of real quality, top nine forwards, top four or five defensemen, that they really haven't had to make because they haven't had that kind of depth in the last few years.
Joe Bono, Tom DeLuca, Isles Blog Podcast, chatting with John Kreiser, NHL.com. John, you look at that game in Arizona. The Isles only allowed 8 even-strength shots the entire game. It's as if in a blink the defensive mindset of this team has changed completely. What has happened over the course of the last 3 games where all of a sudden they've become more defensive-oriented and the goaltending's been much improved?
The defense is playing better, and some of it's just getting used to each other. I mean, remember that this is a team that put 2 new forwards in, put 2 defensemen in that didn't even play in the preseason because they were acquired 7 days before the season started. So there is a getting to know you factor, and Jack Capuano is trying to figure out who's the square peg that he can put in the square hole and the round peg in the round hole, and it's not always apparent. He's already juggled his power play combinations, for example, after Vishnovsky came back. Whether you like that or not is another question, because it seemed that the way it was before Lubo came back was working pretty well. But and you're going to have to juggle because of injuries. But again, as I said before, they have that kind of depth. They're going to have to work on their penalty killing, which really struggled until the last 2 games in LA and Arizona. If they can get the penalty killing right, that would be a big help, because their penalty killing was killing them. If you're below 70%, I mean, that's ungodly dreadful. And in the NHL, you can't, below 80% is a formula for trouble. Below 70% is horrendous, and that's where they were for a couple of weeks. I think they've climbed north of 70% now after the last couple of games, and they've let the Devils take the last spot. And that's one reason, by the way, that New Jersey is struggling, is that they can't kill penalties either.
Well, John, following Tuesday night's tilt with the Avalanche, 4 of the next 5 Islanders games will be against the top 2 teams in the conference, being Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay. How will the Islanders handle that test?
That's going to be a good test for them. They have their home game Tuesday night against Colorado, and then they go right back on the road. They spend the weekend down in Florida, and they'll see what turned out to be a home-and-home series with the Lightning, which is a really good team. Don't kid yourself. That's not just Steven Stamkos has 9 goals, and you would never know it, because they have a terribly well-balanced team. They have very good defense. Ben Bishop was a Vezina Trophy finalist last year in goal. And remember that they're leading the Atlantic Division, and they don't even have their best defenseman because Victor Hedman's hurt. And then the Penguins are going to be a really strong test, because the Penguins are just on a roll. I mean, they're not just beating teams. They're beating the crap out of them. Mike Johnston's system has been a very good fit for their forwards. The defense is playing well, and their goaltending is piling up a lot of shutouts. Marc-Andre Fleury, whatever you may think of his playoff meltdowns of recent lore, he did win a Stanley Cup at a pretty young age, and I think that getting that contract extension will only help him, and by inference help the Penguins, because he is a very good goaltender when he's on his game.
We'll be back with more of our interview with John Kreiser from NHL.com in a moment, but first, here's Tom DeLuca with "It Was Seen at the Coliseum."
November 27, 2002. On the eve of Thanksgiving dinner, the Islanders were hosting the Ottawa Senators, sporting a new look. The Islanders debuted a new third jersey for the first time ever. The Islanders wore a sweater with orange being the predominant color. It was very popular amongst Islanders fans.
That jersey in first year was the best-selling single jersey ever produced by the Islanders.
Islanders fan and play-by-play voice Chris King agreed, also liking the idea of the new look.
I thought it was good, and again, it was used as an alternate jersey, as a third jersey, so you didn't see it each and every game. It came out on special occasions. For many seasons, it was worn on Saturday night only, so it became that kind of special jersey.
As for the game, Alexi Yashin had rallied 2 assists to help Brad Isbister and Matthias Weinhandel score to lift the Islanders to a 2-1 lead. But with 7:22 to go in the third period, Radek Bach would beat Chris Osgood to tie the game at 2, just over a minute and a half after Weinhandel put the Isles ahead. The game would end in a 2-2 tie. As for the Islanders' third jersey, they were scrapped after the 06-07 season as the Islanders revamped their uniform arsenal. Roughly 9 years after showcasing a new third jersey again on Thanksgiving Eve, the Islanders' retail department brought out a new jersey with a color never seen before by Islanders fans. Black. A jersey not too popular amongst the Islanders fans.
John Kreiser, writer, columnist, NHL.com, is our guest. Follow him on Twitter, at jkreiser77NHL. What's the 77 for, Pierre Turgeon?
I like sevens, and Pierre was an underrated
huh?
great player, especially he had one of the great seasons in Islander history.
58 goals.
Yes, he had a tremendous season. He was also a very nice guy, and people also forget he was a terrific baseball player when he was a kid. He actually played in the Little League World Series for Canada when he was young.
There you go, Pierre Turgeon fact during the Isles Blog podcast. Some trade rumors swirling the last couple of days with the Isles in Arizona about the team being interested in acquiring Keith Yandel. Anything you heard about that? Could Garth Snow possibly make another move for a defenseman after already bringing in Boychuk and Letty?
Could he? I suppose. Yeah, I suppose he could. I mean, there's been suppositions that they would like to get Yandel for a couple of years. Don Maloney has never been very interested in trading him because Yandel's a very good player. He signed to a very reasonable contract, and their defensive unit down there is probably the best aspect of the team. They have a 1-2 of Yandel and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, which is terrific. That 1-2 punch can play with anybody. The one thing that Donnie doesn't have down there are forwards. They're really struggling to score, as Islander fans saw Saturday night. They didn't even generate a whole lot of offense against a team that was playing, you know, that was finishing up 2 weeks on the road and playing its third game in four nights. They're going to struggle to score out there, and it's not impossible that as the season goes on, that there could be some interaction between Garth and Don Maloney. They have a history. They've made deals together, and some of it's going to depend on the ownership situation down there, because the Andrew Barraway, who wanted to buy the Islanders, is instead buying into the Coyotes. He's going to eventually wind up being the majority owner. And of course, the Islanders are in the process of transferring ownership over the next couple of years to the two new owners. One thing that'll be interesting to see this year for Islander fans is not only trades, but like that, but as they get closer to the deadline, and if they're still really in the hunt, will they be willing to pick up some salary? Say, if there's a veteran player that could help them on a team that is pretty sure it's not going to make the playoffs, that's something that Islander fans are really going to want to see.
You know, we didn't plan it, but we got Pierre Turgeon and Don Maloney in the same discussion, really close to each other. Maloney obviously trading Turgeon to the Montreal Canadiens with Vladimir Malikov back in, I believe, 1995. I want to ask you about a player that hasn't stepped on the ice this season. What's your thoughts on Matt Donovan, and why is Brian Strait getting the nod with Boychuk out over Matt Donovan?
I don't know. Matt Donovan, if you look at the advanced stats, the possession numbers and things like that, drives possession. He's been very good at that, but he's one of those players, when he makes a mistake, it seems to wind up in their net. I don't know why. You know, some guys can make a mistake and the goalie will bail them out. And at least last year, it seemed like whenever Matt made a mistake, it wound up in the Islanders' net. They're different types of defensemen, and I don't know, maybe Garth and Jack Capuano feel they have enough quote-unquote, you know, puck-moving offensive defensemen. I'm surprised in a way that they don't give Donovan more of a chance. But I believe that if they try to send him down, they'd have to put him through waivers. My understanding is that's why he doesn't get sent down. And I mean, he's basically not played any hockey for a month now.
Well, John, let's take a look at the goaltending situation quick. It's been pretty inconsistent how the Islanders have managed both Halak and Johnson. What's your opinion on the approach so far this season?
I think they've done pretty well with that. I think that, for example, he played Jack played Chad Johnson back-to-back games because as a reward because he had played so well in Boston. And you want to be a little careful with Halak. He has a history of groin problems that in the past, especially when he was with St. Louis, you know, would cause him to miss 2 or 3 weeks during the regular season. So it's not going to be like, say, the Rangers with Henrik Lundqvist, where, you know, Cam Talbot might play 15 games. This could be more like 55-27, something like that, about a 2-to-1 ratio, which is pretty much what you've seen. And I think Halak, again, you know, he's learning a whole new defense, whole new system, and it's taken them a while. But he was very sharp in the two games he played last week. He was very good in Anaheim, and he was as good as he had to be in Arizona. He didn't see a lot of shots, but none of them got in, you win a 1-0 game, you can't ask any more from your goaltender than to stop what he sees.
John Kreiser, NHL.com, at jkreiser77NHL. Let's talk Lubo, Lubomir Visnovsky. You know, John, when he's healthy, you realize how smooth of a skater he really is. But even though he's looked at as an offensive defenseman, getting him back in the lineup really did coincide with all this improved defense as well. Talk about Visnovsky and what he's done to really settle the blue line in the pairings.
Yeah, he does settle that group down. They missed him dreadfully last year because he missed most of the season with injuries, with a concussion. He is, he's a real settling presence. And he and Thomas Hickey, when they were both healthy, obviously they're not very big, but they have always had very good possession numbers together, which you would think would be counterintuitive because you would think that a team could dump the puck in and forecheck comparatively small defensemen, but they're both very, very good at moving the puck. And yeah, they missed Visnovsky last year. And then even at the start of this year, even when they were winning, you want that veteran presence, and the guy who can move the puck has got a good shot and good offensive presence. And having him, keeping him healthy is going to be a big thing for the Islanders going forward. They have more defensive depth than they've had in the past, but they don't have anybody else really like him. They don't have somebody who mixes his skill sets and his veteran presence. He's still a very good skater, even at age 38. And he'll also have the incentive of trying to show that he's worth another contract, either to the Islanders or somebody else in the NHL, because this is his contract year. And like many other players, he was skeptical. If you remember, he didn't want to come here. Not so much that it was the Islanders. He wanted to stay in Slovakia for a while. He did come here. And as has happened with many other players, it's not an unusual phenomenon that guys come to Long Island, and when they become Islanders and they learn that there's more to Long Island than the Coliseum and the Marriott that's across the parking lot. I had this conversation with Bill Guerin when he was an Islander a few years ago, when we were waiting for something. I was just kidding him. I said, how do you like the island? And he said, same thing. I found out there's so much of it that it's not just, two buildings and a parking lot in the middle. And guys find that this is a really nice place to play, that the fans, they would like to see more of them, obviously, but they're very passionate, that the building is not the most modern in creation, obviously, but it does have a lot of history, and it holds the noise really well. It's not one of the, like, the big, vast buildings of the 90s and the 2000s. It's basically the same building as the old Spectrum, the original Spectrum, before the that was built in the 60s. It's a low roof, holds the noise well, and a lot of guys have come to really enjoy living on Long Island and playing out here. I remember talking to Aaron Asham when he had moved on a couple years ago, and he still had he still spent time on the island. It's not an unusual phenomenon. Guys really like living on Long Island. You can go to New York if you want, but you don't get the attention that you do in places like Toronto, where if you're a Maple Leaf, you can barely walk down the street sometimes.
I know, being a native Long Islander like yourself, and someone that's followed the team, been a fan of the team for many, many years. Last year of the Coliseum, have you been out there yet? Are you planning to go out there multiple times? And what's your general thoughts on this being the final year before the big move to Brooklyn next season?
Well, I'm curious to see as they go on, especially if they continue to play well. Hopefully the crowds will pick up. The weeknight crowds have been 11,000. They haven't really they've only had two Saturday games, opening night and the game against Dallas. And like most places, you usually draw better on weekends. They are, the Coliseum has its own history. It's, it could have been better taken care of during its lifetime, but it doesn't have a lot of the amenities that the modern buildings have. But it has its own character, and a lot of the newer buildings don't necessarily have that. I've covered four of the first five home games, and it's interesting to come out and look up and realize that building is largely unchanged, except for the biggest alteration is the row of suites on top. But that's largely the building that the Islanders stepped onto for the first time in 1972. It's there is nothing like it anymore in the NHL, and it'll be sad to see that go. I mean, yes, time marches on, and you want to see, a place with nicer amenities and things like that. But it'll, as a hockey fan, somebody who's watched hockey since the early '60s, it will be sad in a lot of ways to see that building go, because there's really nothing like it remaining. When the Penguins were in 2 years ago for the playoffs, that Sunday afternoon game, I was sitting in the press box upstairs, and you could feel the table rumbling a little bit because there was so much noise, especially at the start of the game when they took the lead. And on the off day, the Penguins had to skate, and Dan Bylsma was coaching them then, and somebody during his session with the media asked him about the noise at the start of the game and how well his team handled it. And he said, basically, paraphrasing, but he said, not well. They are a veteran team, and it did settle down. But it took them a long time that day, if you remember, to be able to cope with the noise, because the building holds noise. There's nowhere for it to go. And when you pack that place and the fans are really into it, there's probably not another place like it in the league.
Well, let's hope the old barn gets to see a couple more playoff games, maybe a few more than a couple this spring. John Kreiser, NHL.com, thanks so much for joining us. We hope to catch up with you again some point down the season.
That'd be great, guys. Thanks very much for having me.